Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, Get Inspired and Motivated by Life-Changing Stories. Today I have an amazing and phenomenal guest with me, and let me just introduce her properly before she will actually tell her amazing story. So Gina Gardiner is actually number one international best-selling author. She's also a motivational speaker, empowerment and relationship coach, and transformational leadership trainer. And then the best bit, she has over 30 years of experience helping people overcoming and just challenging themselves, but mainly helping with happiness, success, and fulfillment. How awesome is that? And today we have Gina actually sharing her story about actually how she ended up, who is she now, what did she overcome? Because the idea is to actually motivate you and inspire. Gina, thank you so much for actually joining the podcast and sharing your story in a couple of minutes with us. Thank you.
It's a huge pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Thank you.
It's amazing. Thank you so much. So can I ask you the first question, actually? How did you end up where you are now? Because honestly, your titles are just absolutely amazing. What you achieved is phenomenal. And I'm honestly, nicely said, jealous. I mean, I wish to be like you. I really wish to be like you. But I'm sure it wasn't easy. I'm sure. Every phenomenal person has a story behind this success. What's your story?
I started teaching, and for the first time in my life, I found who I was, something I was really good at. I was promoted very early. I became a deputy head or deputy principal when I was just 28. And I was appointed to be the catalyst for change. This is back in the early 1980s. In fact, when I went for the interview, I was told by the then head, "Don't apply because we want a man." And in those days, they could get away with it. But I did apply and I did get the job. And for the first few months, he and I worked together strategically to look at how we could bring the school into the then 20th century. And we got to the February half term. You know, in schools in the UK, we have a week off in February. Was really relieved to get there. Now, I was a keen skier. And in those days, it was fashionable to have the longest skis you could have. Things have changed. And for Christmas, I had a pair of skis that were 10 centimetres longer than I had been used to. So I went to St. Anton in Italy and I spent the week, for the most part, wrapping that extra 10 centimetres around my neck. And on the Thursday, I had a bad fall. And so I said to the party that my friends, "I'm not going to come skiing with you tomorrow. I'm going to go off and there's a beautiful run called St. Christoph. I'm going to go and join them and I'll meet you for lunch." And at lunch, they said, "Well, come with us. We found a great new run." And so off we went. It was a beautiful day. One of those special days where the sun was brilliantly shining. It was warm. And as the chairlift went up from the valley, you had this incredible view of the mountains. You could see for miles. Anyway, we got off the chairlift. I followed them. And they went round a corner, and then it didn't take much to recognise that this isn't what they were expecting. And instead of it being the gentle, long but gentle run, we had found ourselves at the top of the Schindlergrats, which is the most difficult black run in St. Anton. Now, it was a mogul field. Now, a mogul is where the snow has been carved by the weather. And moguls can be like cobbles, just an inch or so. But these were 6-foot monsters. And the whole of this very, very steep run was just these great moguls that you had to ski over the top and slip down and then ski along and then turn around. So I'd skied about a third and then I fell. And it took me about 20 minutes to get to where they were. And we were each sitting on a mogul, rather like an elf sitting on a mushroom. And because it was such a hot day, my mogul gave way. The top of it had melted and I began to fall. There was nowhere to land because of the way the terrain was. Knocked myself out, and I don't know how much longer later, I found myself in a heap between moguls. Well down the mountain. I'm told I fell about 150, 200 feet. it took everybody a long time to ski to me, and I wasn't really aware of what I'd done, but I didn't want to go in the blood wagon, and they helped me back to the hotel. The one good thing about it is, between the fall and the bit of skiing that I'd done, we'd actually traversed most of the slopes, so there wasn't much to go. Travelled home the next day, went straight to A&E, and I found that I'd got a bad concussion and I'd trapped a nerve in my neck. To cut a long story short, I was back at school a couple of weeks later, and then 3 weeks after that, I was due to be deputy leader on the borough ski party, and we took 150 some children skiing to Switzerland. As we skied, I became more like Quasimodo. And by the last day, as the children came back after the last day skiing, I said to my colleagues, I need to go and lie down. And I went up to my bunk and I managed to get onto the top bunk. And then suddenly discovered that I was paralysed down one side. I didn't want to frighten the children. So those minutes while I waited until somebody came to see how I was felt like an absolute eternity. I was very frightened. As soon as somebody came, all hell broke loose, and I was taken off to a local hospital and then transferred to Geneva University Hospital, and a couple of weeks later flown home. I gradually got my mobility back, and I was back at school by the beginning of June. And I managed to do school and sleep. And when by the time I got to the end of the summer term, which is sort of well into July, I was really looking forward to 6 weeks at home where I could recover. 2 weeks into the holiday, I got a phone call very, very early in the morning from my head principal's wife. She'd found him dead in bed. He'd had a heart attack. So far from it being the restful holiday that I was anticipating, I had to support and help her. I had to let all the staff, the parents, the local authority know. And I became acting head. And 4 months later, I was appointed to be the permanent head of the school. Big school. And I was absolutely determined that the children and the staff in my school were going to get the very best deal that I could offer. In 1990s, I mean, my health deteriorated. I started using a wheelchair in 1987. In 1996, I sneezed and I ruptured a disc. I had failed back surgery. I became a very good stalk. I could stand on one leg, but if I put my left foot to the floor, then I just used to faint. It took me almost 2 years to walk to the bottom of my very small garden. And on the last day of the summer term again, I was sick and I ruptured a second disc. I had failed back surgery again, and I was completely wheelchair bound. And until I had a spinal stimulated in 2004, I couldn't walk at all.
My God.
Now, the gift in all of this, and there was a huge gift in all of this, I couldn't physically get into my classrooms. So I had to find a way of developing people that didn't require me standing behind them and saying, do this, do that, do the other. Now, it was very successful.
I love that.
People took responsibility for their own performance and I shared the responsibility for the performance of everyone. And over the years, I created a structured, sequential approach to the development of leadership. It was very successful. The school had many, many awards and kite marks, and we were on the best 100 schools in the country list twice.
Wow, that's massive.
And I would really like to think that if I hadn't been in a wheelchair, that I would have developed something as powerful. But I'm also honest enough to recognise that the chances are I'd have been too interfering. And that I would have managed and led in a very different way. I left headship in 2004 because my health was deteriorating. But while I was ahead, the budget was poor, and I used to work for the DFES as an advisor. I worked for the National College of Leadership, the London Institute. all of those things to bring a budget into school and to keep the school at cutting edge. So in 2004, I thought, well, I'm not ready for daytime television. I've got all of these skills. What am I going to do with it? So I took myself off to do a research project across industries, looking at the development of people and particularly leadership. Were the issues facing different industries the same as they were in education? I thought they were, but I wanted to find out if they were. They were. So I wrote my first couple of books to become my calling card. And for the first few years, I worked mainly in corporates doing coaching and leadership training. I've always done life coaching, even when I was ahead. Now, then the recession hit. And exactly. In the first week in January 2009, I had contracts which were going to sustain me the whole year. And in 1 week, they all disappeared.
No.
Because companies had completely eradicated their training and development budget. Now, by this time, I was already doing some lecturing at Essex University Business School, and they would commission me out to go and work with businesses for very specific reasons. But what used to happen is I'd go and help them sort out whatever it was, and then a few weeks, a few months later, I'd be invited back because there was something else. Yeah. And it struck me that all of these things could be avoided if the quality of leadership was different. And so I started working with individual businesses rather than the big corporates and helping them develop leadership for themselves, always with the highest decision makers, but also with depending on the size of the company, with their senior middle managers and sometimes whole staff. And I still do that. And all of the companies that I've worked with consistently are more productive, more profitable, better staff relationships, better staff wellness because people are happy, and better work-life balance for everybody.
Good.
Now, when I was ahead, I had a very strong sense of purpose, and my purpose was to educate and support people to become empowered. And I had a growing sense after I left headship that I had a bigger job to do than I was doing. I needed to get to more people. And as a result of that, I started a new business, which runs alongside the old one, but the new one is all about finding your genuine power, stepping into being the best version of you that you can be, both personally and spiritually. But on Monday, I am about to launch a very different leadership program called the Enlightened Leadership Program, which, if you like, is a culmination of over 30 years' work. But it's looking at leadership in a very, very different way. And it's using what I learned is that if you want to create leaders who then empower other people, you have to learn to be a great leader first. And so this program is extended. It's a 10-month program. There's lots of support by leadership facilitators, one-on-one coaching. There's group coaching. There's a whole program of videos, PowerPoint presentations, and activities and so on, designed very specifically to help people develop as individuals first and as leaders alongside. And I'm really excited about it. But for me, everything that's happened so far, everything I've done has been a preparation for this. And I think that it's my purpose in life. And if you look at the quality of leadership that there is around at the moment, it's pretty toxic, isn't it? This is about the starting of a movement of people who want to lead with integrity, compassion, and courage. People who want to make a positive difference in the world. So that's a very long answer to what appeared to be a very simple question.
I love that. But you know what? As I said earlier, there's always a story. And story will take some time to tell. As you go and you watch a movie, which is a story, it takes some time. As you take a book in your hands, it takes some time to read that through. But as you read, just like as you were talking now, there's always some golden nuggets. There always are. And, you know, as the outcome, I love the outcome. And you're right. Would you ever be who you are now is not what happened.
No.
You wouldn't.
No. And there have been some really defining moments, if I may share a couple of those.
Because
I think they're, lots of people have said to me, I mean, after my two back operations, I was back in school within days. In fact, on the second time, you know, it was 6 months later and the surgeon was saying, we'll think about you going back to school for a couple of hours a week. And I just laughed. I'd been back 5 days after coming out of hospital part-time and full-time 3 weeks later. Wow. And people might look at that and say, well, but why? Why didn't you give yourself time to recover? But for me, if I was at home on my own, I couldn't make a cup of tea because I couldn't fill the kettle. I couldn't reach a car. I would have been limited to daytime TV and reading. But I could, a taxi could take me into school. I was set up there. I had a wheelchair. I could use my brain, my mouth. And there were people there who could do the heavy lifting, if you like. But I could run my school effectively, do something I loved, something I was good at, something that had a real purpose. Or I could sit at home and be disabled. Which would you choose?
Bingo, I would definitely choose to go to school, of course. Because at home, you feel lonely and you start pitying yourself and you start blaming life and you start blaming people who don't come visit you. And you just go into this whole negativity world. What you've done is absolutely amazing and everybody should do the same thing. Stop pitying yourself, do everything, whatever it takes to go out there, reach the people, use the situation in maximum way. Love that. Very proud of you.
Thank you. And I do recognise that there are people who may not be, will look at perhaps what I've done and say, I can't do that. But what I want them, you, if you're listening to this or watching this, to take from it is look at what you can do rather than what you can't do. And however limited you believe you are, that's what's going to hold you back. So the second pivotal moment, which for me was really profound. So by this time, it's 2006. I can walk a few steps. I've had this, I've retired from headship. I'm now working with corporates. And even as a head, I would go and work around the country for the government. I'd be picked up from home by taxi, always the same taxi driver who knew me. They would deliver me to wherever I wanted to go. I'd by this time become an LP, neuro-linguistic master practitioner. And I wanted to go and see lots of people using these techniques. And I ended up at the Excel Centre in London, where Tony Robbins, who's probably the most well-known American motivator.
Oh, my man, Tony Robbins, of course.
He was running an Unleash the Power Within course. 10,000 people on the course, which in itself is just mind-blowing. Now, in the morning of that program, he'd been talking about another program called Date with Destiny, which he was only ran at that time in California. I dismissed it out of hand. How could I possibly go to America on my own? I didn't have a travel electric chair in those days. How could I do that? Now, it's never going to work. That evening, we did the fire walk. And for those of you who don't know, it sounds a bit mad, but you walk across hot coals in bare feet. And if you're in the right mindset, you don't burn. So at that time, as I say, I could stagger a few steps and I had somebody holding my arm each side and I managed the fire walk. I was thrilled, chuffed to little mint balls. And as I sat back in my seat, the guy behind me was a double amputee, no legs below the knee. He tipped himself onto his hands and he did the fire walk, handstanding. I was blown away. I thought to myself, if he can do that, I can go to America. I booked my ticket, I booked my flight, off I went. I've done all the Tony Robbins stuff. I've been a senior leader. I've traveled the world and I owe it to that man. I have no idea who he is. But what I want you to take from this, if you're listening to this, is if you believe you can't, it's a done deal. All right? You won't try. But if you believe you can and your mindset is, I don't necessarily know how, but I'm determined to do it, you can do anything. And, you know, I think disability is a bit of a metaphor for life, that if you, my legs don't work, but even now my mobility, although much better, I still use a wheelchair if I go out of the house or I go traveling. But it's my enabler, it's my chariot on fire. But if in your head you believe you're not good enough, that you aren't clever enough, you're too tall, too short, too fat, too whatever, you take that with you every moment of every day. And so that limiting belief keeps you stuck. And so I would say to anybody who's listening or watching this, challenge your thoughts, challenge your beliefs about yourself, because you stay in your comfort zone, it becomes a straitjacket. You move out of your comfort zone and your comfort zone expands. And I was very much out of my comfort zone when I did the first trip. But what I've learned is actually, you just got to be creative and have a very good sense of humour, because you will need it along the way.
Love that. I love that, honestly. Oh my God, I wish I could be there next to you now to give you the biggest hug right now. Because
oh, well, I'm taking an energetic hug.
I'm giving you a virtual hug, because what you've done is truly remarkable, truly remarkable. I mean, to overcome so many challenges and have that perfectly positive attitude to life, to what you can, what you can't, and you're perfectly right. And I 100% agree with you, because I always say the same thing to my clients as well. If you think it's not worth doing that, you will never even think about chances how to do that. It's not about why to do it, it's about why not. Why not to do it? Seriously, not in a negative way, but why shouldn't be doing that? If there's any reason why you shouldn't be doing that, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But if there's no reason as such, then just go ahead. What can be better than actually experiencing life to your fullest potential? And you do it, and you actually do it. Travel the world, build your name, build your reputation, change God knows how many millions of people's lives. You're rock and rolling that.
Thank you. I do want to say to people, because it could be very easy for it to come across as that it's always easy.
Mm.
There have been dark days. There have been times when I've had to really dig deep. But that's called life. And what the thing is, the more you focus on what you can rather than what you can't, the more you have gratitude for the good things in life. Because even on the darkest, most terrible day, there are things to be grateful for. Even if it's the fact that you've got great plumbing, you know, and that you're having a nice cup of tea, or a friend, you know, phones you. That if you focus on those things, then life is good. If you focus on lack and division and the things that you're fearful, those things appear to grow, don't they? And they will take over. And life becomes a very different thing if you are focusing on all of the things that are going wrong, all of the things that you can't do. And it's 95%, they talk about 95% of what we do is habitual. So for me, it makes sense for my default place to be a positive one. Yes, there are times when, there are still times when I get frustrated or fed up, but I don't stay there, and I don't stay there long. And I think it's, you know, for people who are listening to this is, you know, where's your default setting? Do you tend to look at the gloomy side? Do you tend to focus on, you know, on the things that aren't working for you, and give enough credibility to the things that are working for you? And the chances are, you know, if you're listening to this or watching this, you are one of the probably the top 10% of the world in terms of your capacity to enjoy the good things in life, aren't you? There are people who are on the streets who are starving who are listening to this, and many people are.
Love that. And you're right, because there'll be always some people who will say, no, it can't work for me. No, I'm in a different situation. Yeah, it works for others, but not in my family. It works in other countries, but not in my city. And yes, there could be lots of excuses. But as long as you focus and you concentrate on those excuses and you come up with more and more reasons why not, nothing's going to change. Yeah. It's like searching for a car, searching for the right pair of shoes, searching for the right property. You have to focus on what exactly you want instead of what you don't want in order to find one. Nobody on earth is going around to find perfect house thinking what they don't want.
No.
Don't do it.
Very true. Yeah. And I think, you know, we are the common denominator. We take ourselves into every second of every day from the moment we're born till the moment we die. And it's very easy, isn't it, to blame, I can't do this because of something out there. You know, the minute you do that, you're in victim mode, aren't you?
Yeah. 100%.
We are the creators of our own life story. So if you're going to write the script for your life story, well, give yourself a damn good part. Be the hero, not the victim. You know, if you take total responsibility for your emotional well-being, nobody can make you unhappy or make you angry unless you give them permission. But that all starts with the relationship that you have with yourself, doesn't it? And that, for me, that's a really important place to start. If you have a sense of self-worth, not arrogance, not ego, but do you value yourself? Because each of you listening and watching this is an amazing, unique human being. There is only one of you. And so you need to celebrate that and look for the things that you do well and who you are and celebrate those. And the areas for development, well, you have the choice to work on them or not. And working with people like you and working with people like me can help people find the sat-nav. We can't do it for them, can we? But yeah. We can give them we can help them find the right road. We can help them, you know, cross over the terrain effectively and efficiently. And once they've learnt that, then they can help other people to do the same.
And that is so 100%. And I always give an example of getting a driving license. Yeah. We are not here to drive for them. We're not here to study for them. We're here to help them to get those driving license. But then it's up to them to practice that driving every day to become experienced and fully available and capable driver. Because without practice, without doing that talk, you'll be never able to be really confident driver.
Yeah. Very true.
Oh my God, I love you. I absolutely love you. I love how actually, because I always ask those people who overcome some serious challenges, I always ask, how can you overcome those dark days? Because even though you can be the most positive person, yes, it is easy. Think positive, wake up, be full of energy. But everybody has those days. And I love how you beautifully wrap around and you answer the question already. You just said it. I love it.
Let me give the people a very simple strategy that makes a huge difference.
Yes, please.
Early on, I asked people to collect gratitudes and to do it in a very specific way. All right. So collecting gratitudes means you have to be in the moment when you collect a gratitude. And if you think about it, you can't do anything to change the past. You can only learn from it. And actually, you can't affect the future in the sense of you don't know if that future is going to happen. But lots of people spend huge amounts of time worrying about what might never happen. So collecting gratitude keeps you in the moment and you make it easy. Small things throughout the day that you can be grateful for. So the minute I get in my hot shower, I have a huge sense of gratitude because I don't do cold water. You know, a cup of tea, I'm grateful for this mug of hot tea. I'm grateful, the natural world for me is a huge source of gratitude. What a beautiful tree. Or even when the rain is falling, look at the patterns on the windowsill, or the fact that enables me to have a green garden. All the way through the day, collecting little gratitude. Somebody's phoned you, somebody's given you a hug, you've had a nice meal. The computer and the printer have worked together without. And then at the end of the day, as you go to sleep, scan the day and choose your five favorite gratitudes. And as you scan the day and you find those five gratitudes, really take hold of the emotionally positive charge that that gives you. And if you do that regularly every day for a month, you will have recalibrated your thinking in your brain to something much more positive. If you've got children, it's a lovely thing to get them to do. And then before they go to sleep, that you both share your gratitudes. Because lots of children are struggling and stressed about exams and all sorts of things. And it's a really great habit to get them into too.
Love that. You know what? And this is so important. Not only do it by yourself. Some people start doing that with partners. But including kids from a very early age, It will help them to have this as a normality, as their normal routine of their day. That will be their mindset shift since a very early age. And if you're already on the right positive path since your childhood, how far can you go? Yeah. What's your limit? What can you achieve when actually you have the right mindset, when you are aligned with that positive person who is thinking always about, look what I have, and I'm grateful what I have, and I also can achieve more because I have the right mindset. Love that. Really well said. Really well said.
Thank you. I've got a themed journal that people can buy. And in the themed journal, very early on in the work, that the idea of gratitudes is introduced. And at the end of every journal day, there is a little thank bank, like a piggy bank of gratitudes.
I see.
And if you're having a bad day, then a great thing to do is to just look back at your thank bank and just remind yourself, actually, that despite the fact that it's a pretty grotty day, that you still have a lot to be grateful for. And I've found personally it works for me, and I've worked with hundreds of people and it's worked for them too.
And I believe you, because I think if you never can come across something what you're really grateful today, think about your life. The fact you are here on this planet of Earth, you're breathing, your heart is still beating, that's a huge thing to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
Our life can finish in 1 second. It only takes 1 second to be in a car crash, in a plane crash, to be hit by a bus, to be hit by the train. It's 1 second. Your life can be gone. So whenever I think you're struggling with finding anything, just think to yourself, I am alive and I'm grateful for that. And this is more than enough.
A lesson, a reminder of that. My brother, who was a very vibrant, loving, full of life person, he was on the last practice for the London to Brighton cycle race, age 49, as far as we knew, absolutely fit as a fiddle. They thought at the moment that he'd fallen off his bike. But by the time he reached the floor, he had died.
Oh.
And we didn't know, but he had a congenital heart condition.
Wow.
Now, the gift, and as I said to people watching this, there's a gift in everything. And I have to say, I loved my brother. He was my little brother. It was devastating. But the gift I took from that is it made me really think about my priorities. Well, number one was my health, and he had been saying for a number of years, I must go and have a full MOT, and he'd put it off. The second is that it's relationships which are important.
Mm.
When was the last time that people who were listening and watching said to the people that they love, I love you? And my brother was great at sending me little texts which would just say, love you, or a little heart, or thinking of you. And those were precious at the time, but now in hindsight, they become even more precious. The third is, don't put things off. Don't be a spectator in your own life. Actually live life to the full. And my brother David was one of those people who grabbed life by the throat and really, really made the most of it. And one of the amazing things at his funeral, and there were hundreds of people at his funeral, people kept on coming up and saying, you won't know this. And they'd tell me of some kindness that he had done. Some seemingly small thing that had a profound effect on them because he had noticed and seen them and bothered. Recognize that you have this life. think about what is it, what's the legacy that you want to leave? And don't wait to die to leave a legacy. Leave a living legacy, one through the words you speak, through your actions, that's going to make a positive difference. And to bring that back to the Enlightened Leadership Program, for me, all of that is encapsulated within the development of ourselves as leaders, whether we're leading our family, whether we're leading a team, an organization, or a whole society, the principles are the same. Do you live with integrity? Are you being genuine? Do you walk your talk? Do you have compassion for yourself and others? Do you have the courage to stand up and do what's right rather than what's easy?
That is so true. I love your lessons from this situation. I really love them. And I think, why would you start learning this little tiny but so important habit in our lives? When we start applying them, everything will change. As you said, just sending somebody a love message, giving a little hug, just a little cuddle, just a smile at somebody when you're, I don't know, in the airport, when you're at the counter in the shop, just giving that smile, that gift of smile, just that even question, how are you? You know, those little things, it's just so important to somebody, it could mean the world. And as you said, people were coming to you, sharing the stories, the changes which he has made in other people's lives. Why? Because he was fully focused on those people. He was that, he was giving.
I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago who works with people who have attempted suicide. And in the UK, the biggest cause of death in men under 42 is suicide.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Said,
for many people he worked with, that the thing that stopped them committing suicide is when a complete stranger had walked up to them in the station or on the bridge or whatever and simply asked the question, are you all right?
Yeah.
And that was enough for them to recognize that there were people who did care. And it made that profound difference. And it really struck me at that time, you don't know, do you, the impact that you're, by saying hello and smiling and how are you, and really meaning it, not just lip service to it, but actually being interested, that can have a profound effect on the quality of somebody else's life.
Exactly. And you're so right about this. Oh my God, what a surprise you actually impacted so many lives, because with your mindset, you couldn't not impact them. I mean, it would be a crime not to apply your mindset, your life lessons, everything what you actually gathered all together and now have as expertise. It would be a crime not to pass it on. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
I am really proud of you. And if anything, I just really would like to be like you. Honestly, I think you are really...
To be like you. Each person to embrace their you-ness. Yeah. And
yeah.
We each have things to offer. I'm a lot older than you. You've got plenty of time. I, on the other hand, am very keen to get this moving because, you know, I'm of an age where, you know, I need to get on with it. And if there's anybody out there who's interested, then they can find me on the genuinely-andthewordyou.com website or the enlightenedleadership.co website, through Facebook, through LinkedIn. If you are a leader or an aspiring leader and you want to make a difference, then contact me and let's see if we can do something together to help you be the best leader that you can be.
Love that. And I will definitely make sure that I will copy those details below the podcast itself and also below the video. So wherever somebody is watching or listening, it's entirely up to them, but they can contact you actually and learn from you. Well, I learned so much today and I just love how aligned we are, how very similar minds we have. And what a surprise we got in together.
I don't believe the coincidence, but I'm very grateful to Ben for making the introduction. Thank you very much for having me on the show, been brilliant.
That's very true. Well, Ben is definitely such a sunshine of both of us, our dearest friend, and definitely we have to thank him. So I will also officially thank Ben as well, because if not him, we wouldn't meet. And you know what? This is what life is about. It's not coincidence. Yeah. It's about having the right mindset. You meet another person with the right mindset and that person introduces you to somebody else and it makes this podcast, this inspirational, motivational video being possible to make.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much, dear listeners or watchers, for being here with us. And I'm sure you got inspired. I'm sure you got motivated by Dina. And Dina, thank you so much one more. I really love you. Sending you a big, big hug. And I'm sure we're going to meet with you very, very soon.
I'm sure so too. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.